What's going on, everybody? This is GD of PostBougie.com with the PostBougie podcast for the week of May 2nd, 2010. I'm here with my blog mates and co-conspirators, Black Ink 12, better known as Joel, who is in Tampa, Florida.
What's up? What's up?
And Monica, who is in DC and writes for the American Prospect.
Hello, I still haven't fixed my fire alarm.
It's like the fourth member of the podcast every week now.
Right.
This week's topics are Arizona's brand spanking new draconian immigration law, an article on The Root comparing Barack Obama to Drake, and the kerfuffle around a Harvard third year law student's email in which she said Black people were genetically predisposed to be of lower intelligence. First up is the Arizona immigration law. Monica, you want to give us some
background?
Monica.
So sure. Last week, the Arizona governor signed what is safely, I think, called the toughest bill on immigration in the country. And its aim is to identify and prosecute and deport illegal immigrants. And what it does is basically empower local law enforcement officials to ask for proper identification of anyone who they have a reasonable suspicion of being an illegal immigrant. And what most people take that to mean is that the only way that is going to play out in the real world is that people are going to be racially profiled. Basically, if you are Latino or brown in any way, basically, you'll probably be asked for your ID in Arizona. But that's really only if the law goes into effect. And there are multiple ways in which I think this law will be struck down as unconstitutional. So I don't think it'll have to really happen. But what surprises me most about this law and the response to it too was that, you know, Governor Jen Brewer of Arizona signed it. None of us really knows why. It doesn't seem like it's going to help her politically in any way. It is probably destined to be knocked down, as I said. And since then, there have been a number of really blatantly racist comments by local lawmakers in various states, including this guy, Tim James, in Georgia, who's just running for office there, who basically was like, hey, I've got a really simple and great idea. The driver's test should be in English, you know, and so and no other languages, even though the law requires us to. So I think that's really what surprises people about it, is that it's completely over the top in a way that's not even pretending to be not racist.
Well, the thing that's so striking to me about the Arizona law, or the response to it, is that, you know, under Joe Arpaio, who is the sheriff of Maricopa County, the county in which Phoenix is situated, has pretty much been doing the stuff that has just been codified into law already. I mean, he's already been rounding up people who are brown and driving down the street and asking them for their papers and all that stuff like that. And it's clearly, I mean, it was clearly violating people's rights. He was just kind of encroaching on their space and putting them into positions where they would have to have contact with the police, and then he would ask them for their papers and stuff like that. One of the things that's so surprising to me is that people are trying to game it out as if, like, hypothetically, there could be racially profiling, as if it hasn't been happening already for a long period of time.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I think what's different maybe about this is that it's, like, Arpaio was kind of just a rogue sheriff who has this insane amount of power from his popularity.
Right, and he's popular, right, yeah.
And so now it's codified.
Right. I mean, the codification is obviously really, really bad. But everyone is, I mean, the people who are defending this law, particularly conservatives like George Will, are kind of pretending as if giving more discretion to the police will not result in any kind of abuses of power, as if they weren't abusing their powers already.
Yeah, right. And I think PolitiFact jumped on one point of this. There was a Republican state senator there who, and he supports the law, said something to the effect that, like, you know, this law would not permit police to simply stop people because they look like illegal immigrants, that people would have to be doing something illegal, you know, or look like they were in the midst of some sort of illegal activity. And it's a lie. You know, like, I mean, there's not the law gives you a lot more latitude than that. And that's kind of, it's just the thing. It's like, there's so much lie built up into this law, you know, like I mean, where does this even come from? You know, I guess I'm just trying to figure out, like, what was the impetus behind this? Like, what led them to feel like we need to do this now, like in a pivotal election year?
There was, I mean, well, one of the things, obviously, like you just said, is that it is an election year. Although, again, as Monica was saying before, it doesn't make a lot of sense for Jan Brewer because she's kind of comfortably ahead in the primary polling among Republicans. But there was a poll that came out that said that among Arizona voters, immigration was the chief issue that they were concerned about. So I wonder if it's just kind of bowing to the pressure to kind of do something on this issue, although it's not clear why this is the thing they had to do.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess my issue is, why is immigration? I mean, and you know, you hear a lot of these, you know, people say, well, I'm worried about people taking jobs. Well, I guess, okay, well, then you have to tell me, what jobs are you competing against with immigrants for?
Right. You know, absolutely.
Right. Then you say, well, crime is an issue. Well, statistics consistently show that U.S. cities on the other side of the border that lie along the border tend to be some of the safest cities in the country, like San Diego, El Paso. And El Paso's border with Ciudad Juarez.
Which is like the most violent places in Mexico, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, there's a travel advisory there. They prefer for people not to go there, but just on the other side of the border, El Paso is like one of the five safest cities, major cities in the country. Huh. And so it's like, What is really the problem? I guess what are they really trying to get at? And I think I know what it is this year. You know what they're trying to do, but I don't understand how that helps them in the long term, especially in a state like Arizona. You know,
right? Absolutely. We're like one in five Arizona voters who are Latino? It seems like, I mean, obviously Latinos don't, you know, are not a monolith.
Right.
But it seems like you would not want to just start profiling a whole group of people or start profiling people in entire communities if you had any kind of like long term. I mean, you know, besides the political consequences, it just seems like I can't imagine how effective it will really be. Right. I mean, how do you know when the law has done its job? You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Well, I guess it's to the voter issue. I mean, I feel like, is it, I mean, I don't know this for sure because I'd have to look at statistics, but for the conservative base who this really riles up, the Republican Party has always been really prominent in Arizona. And I would guess that as they do in the rest of the country, Latinos there vote not with the conservatives. And so they're not alienating their base, you know.
Right, but not in this election, but down the road, if you are attempting to make inroads with Latino voters, it seems like you don't want to kind of really cynically antagonize Latino
voters. That's the bigger problem with the whole Republican platform, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to stereotype, but I mean, it just seems like as a whole, their whole playbook is fucked. Like, it's so stupid. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, let's antagonize a growing political base for like short-term gain, you know?
Yeah.
I don't get that. And I mean, here's the thing. I mean, since we're doing broad-based things here, I mean, there are a lot of black people and Latinos that are socially conservative, right?
Absolutely.
Like, Republicans could really make inroads there. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's things where they align on, but it's like this racially charged bullshit that keeps people from like aligning themselves with the party, you know? And this seems to be going down that road.
Absolutely. A lot of people have in recent days have said that the reason why Arizona had to step in was because the federal government had kind of shirked its responsibility in policing the border and cracking down on illegal immigration. I was curious as to what either of you thought of that or whether that carries any weight with you.
It's just going to make the federal government take up the issue faster than they probably would have otherwise. But I mean, I think that's the biggest problem with this bill is that states don't have the authority to set immigration law. And so, I mean, as far as I understand it, so.
Right. I thought that kind of stuff was
it's, Yeah, it's the purview within the purview of the federal government, and so this changes something that is very, it just changes, I think, things in a way that probably won't hold up for that reason.
Right. I mean, that seems like one of the many, many kind of legal grounds on which it won't survive a challenge. Even if it doesn't, even if the legal challenges aren't directly to the profiling point, I imagine that some of it will just be about jurisdiction and powers. But we should probably move on to the next topic, which is Obama versus Drake. And I promise myself I'm going to try not to curse too much on this.
It sounds like a hot mixtape, you know what I'm saying? Like right. Jay-Z, you know what I'm saying? When I was in the 90s.
Young Money featuring Organizer for America.
right.
So I guess it's kind of hard to summarize. So this guy named Thomas Chatterton Williams wrote this piece for The Root, which doesn't make a lot of sense. In which he says he takes two very famous mulattoes. That's his word, obviously. I thought that we all agreed as a people that was out of bounds. But okay, he decided to call them mulattoes. Two very, very famous people, half breeds. Two very famous mongrels. Since we're going all the way down that road, and Barack Obama and octoroons. can I think of other offensive
half breeds?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So he decided to take, you know, Barack Obama and Drake, the rapper Drake, and hold them up as examples of people who, because of their biracial heritage, live on, I guess, operate on the margins of blackness. And so the choices they've made about their self-identity and the way people perceive their, or the way they are accepted as black people can tell us something about, you know, black culture. And he arrives at this really stupid conclusion that Drake is accepted by black people because he has adhered very closely to kind of typical street culture, hip-hop culture standards. Drake, who is half Jewish and half black and is from Toronto. And Barack Obama has been had a harder time making inroads of black people because he is smart and disciplined, despite the fact that he has, according to this guy, has had a much more black American life in terms of he married a dark-skinned woman. This is one of the things he brought up. He went to Trinity Church, you know, and then he lived on the south side of Chicago, and he was a community organizer. I kind of have been arguing about this all day, so I'm a little exhausted. But this is really fucking stupid on every conceivable level.
Oh, wow.
Because, I mean, okay, so without going too much of a rant, why is this cat assuming that, like, Barack Obama and Drake have the same constituency? Let's assume that everything he says is right. It's not, but let's assume that everything he's saying is right. Like, it doesn't follow, one, that black people don't like Barack Obama. I mean, he does have, like, a 95% approval rating or whatever it was.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's not as if, like, but it just, it to me, it seemed like one of those, another, and I flog this all the time, but it seems as another example for some, you know, of someone pulling up the black pathology straw man so they can punch it a little bit, you know? Like, oh, see, street hip-hop culture is delinquent and it's backwards and it values all these crazy things like misogyny and anti-intellectualism, and Barack Obama is not that, and that's why he had a hard inroads with black people. And these are the kind of lazy arguments that we get out of this, out of these straw man-ass articles, and I wish people would stop.
Yeah.
Also, like, just let's just assume for fun that everything he said is true and it's a totally valid point and we should all have read articles like this. It's really, really badly written. Like,
oh my gosh.
The my favorite was like, Obama, who has darker skin and rounder features than Drake, looks blacker to my mixed kid eye. Like, like a conversational tone about it that is really affected and annoying.
He also says that Drake, to his eyes, looks Sicilian. Now, I don't want to argue the veracity of that little point, but that's completely stupid and beside the point. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, he says that to be black in a real way nowadays. It's a closely resemble Jay-Z or Carmelo Anthony than James to more closely resemble Jay-Z or Carmelo Anthony than James Baldwin or Thurgood Marshall. Now,
a big red flag
in all of these articles is nowadays. Nowadays, if you ever see nowadays in the article, don't pay attention to anything that comes after. It's stupid, and the person making it is an idiot.
Yeah, I would like to know what Black Life Today is. Like, I didn't hear that. Explain to me what the fuck that is. Like, does it involve watermelon and dancing and Nikes? I mean,
absolutely. Apparently, it involves robbing bodegas for pound cake.
I agree. First of all, it was like Monica said, it was terribly written. And then again, it's just. And I think you mentioned this on Twitter. Like, it's like I don't think this article would have been written if, like, he didn't make this particular argument. Like, if it would have been published for The Root, because, like, all it does is feed into this, like, this pathology where, like, Black people today are so terrible, and, you know, we're just all listening to, you know, Too Short and Mary Payne and all that sort of shit. And it's just like, does this guy know any Black people at all?
I know.
Also, there's just like a bunch of weird things where he just makes points that are complete. Like, he's like really deriding Drake for his public demeanor and like how he presents himself. And he says, like, Black writers, intellectuals, and public figures have an obligation to resist and speak out against such limited forms of identity as we see around us today. And it's, first of all, it's like, I don't think anybody has an obligation to do anything like that at all. Absolutely. But secondly, like, this dude is not a Black writer or an intellectual or really a public figure. He's an entertainer.
Right.
And he's entertaining people, I guess.
Right. And I mean, you could argue that, you know, just because he's an entertainer doesn't mean that he relinquishes any kind of responsibilities he has to, like, but that's not something that's required of him necessarily. I mean, it's something he takes on, you know, he can take on his own. But I mean, in the universe of hip hop licentiousness and depravity, Drake is pretty low on the fucking totem pole. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there are lots of things to get mad about.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
and
like,
this is not one of them.
It seemed like he just needed somebody who was biracial to make his stupid point, because his oh, this is very important. This cat, Chatterton Williams, has a book, a forthcoming book called, it's all right there in the title. You know, it tells you everything you kind of need to know about this cat. Losing My Cool: How a Father's Love and 15,000 Books Beat Hip Hop Culture. Now, obviously, all 15,000 of those books were written by John McWhorter. But it doesn't.
Also, it's like, it annoys me so much because it's like, okay, if you wanted to say hip hop culture is like a bad thing that infects youth and prevents them from succeeding, like, if you just want to say that that's true, which obviously it's not, like, this kid was not saved by books. He was saved by, like, whatever cultural and social situation his parents were in that allowed him to go to college and read books in his home.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, I mean, he's trying to make himself like up to be like some sort of, like, you know, modern day hero or some shit. Like, you know, like, I have a father and I had all these books that saved me from a life of depravity. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think this is a big part of it, is that, and we said this on the last podcast, but it's like, I feel like a lot of time, like, this argument gets drummed up so people can beat up on this pathology straw man, so they can make all these really, really mundane middle class life decisions and pretend as if these, like, consumerist choices, like, I live in a house and I own my home and I have good credit and I went to college, are things that are political in nature. Like, they're revolutionary. Like, it's so, like, there's so much pressure on me to be Black. And to eschew these things that are middle class and culturally normative, that for me to aspire to these things anyway means that I'm bucking the system,
the circumstances of my birth are brave.
Right. Yeah. Right. like, look at me now, I'm in middle management. And you know what I mean? It's You know, it's just like, I mean, like, it seems like there's this huge, huge universe of people who want credit. The irony of the Chris Rock niggas versus Black people thing was that he was saying that, you know, niggas in that construction were the people who were adhering to pathology, are the people who want credit for like regular everyday shit that they're supposed to do. But to me, in my experience, it's always been people who like came from like moderately comfortable middle class families, who ended up as comfortably middle class adults and pretended as if like, oh well, people were mean to me on the playground when I was growing up, and said that I acted white and all this other stuff like that, and now look at me, and that, you know, it's like, first of all, we already tackled the acting white thing, but like the whole idea that. That just being a regular ass middle class person, regular ass middle class norms, and like, is some kind of heroic feat. It's completely ridiculous, and I wish we would stop it, because then we end up, you know, praising all sorts of things, you know, whether it's art and culture or whatever, just for being, just for reflecting that lifestyle. Everything, things are marked as positive. You know what I mean? Like, just because they're not about the hood. You know what I mean? Like, regardless of like their actual like artistic merit or like the weight or the value of the argument being made in the defense.
Right. Sorry. Well, this guy, I mean, obviously, this guy thinks his life is so special. You know what I mean? Like, he just kind of seems like the kind of person. If somebody told him you speak so well, he'd like take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh wow.
Well, I read 15,000 books.
Yeah. It's also. I mean, I don't. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, it's good. I mean, and also it's like, I'm sure we've brought this up before too, but the biggest problem with this, or one of the biggest problems with this, is that it's the exact same argument that white middle class people make as an excuse to be racist. You know, it's like,
absolutely.
I worked hard for this, and I'm moralizing poverty in a way that allows me to justify the system in which I benefit and other people don't.
I mean, to go way, way far afield, Candace Jenkins, who is a sociologist, or she's an academic. I'm sorry. I don't want to misrepresent her field, her discipline. But she has this idea. She coined the term the salvific wish, which is this idea that it's a really old idea, and it goes back, you know, obviously a century, if not more, that black people, if black people adhere to normative ideals, if they just adhere to them strongly enough, then we I'm doing air quotations. You can't see me. We can be saved, you know, from our plight or whatever. And so part of that idea, I mean, her specific critique was about, you know, gender norms. And like, you know, if black people just got married and comported themselves in a certain way, and got, you know, and took care of their kids and all stuff, she's not endorsing this idea. She just gave a name to it. And that idea, the salvific wish idea, I think informs a lot of these articles, right? Like if everyone just, wanted to read the Supreme Court writings of Thurgood Marshall instead of listening to hip hop or some other ridiculous argument, you know, if people were just like, if people just were more middle class and bourgeois in their life goals and ambitions, then a lot of the real problems in Black America will be like ameliorated. But the problem with that is it assumes that if people just didn't have quote unquote ghetto names, or if people just didn't, you know, do all these things that are associated with the hood, then their conditions would be improved, as opposed to just like the problem is the conditions in the hood. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then the other part of it is like, again, like you said before, does he not think that black people? Like, does he actually not know any black people? I mean, it's perfectly right. possible for you to like Drake or hip hop and not like all hip hop and think that hip hop is misogynistic and love hip hop. And it's perfectly possible to hold in your head at the same time that Barack Obama is someone who can be admired and still like, you know, Jadakiss or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, you can hold those ideas in your head at the same time. And, you know, it assumes that like, that people have this, that there's this like really specific strain of black anti-intellectualism that is specific to hip hop culture and black culture and street culture. It's stupid. And I went on a rant. Anyway, we should move on to the next topic. Oh, we talked way too fucking much. The Harvard Law School thing, Joel, you wanna?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in the past couple of days, there's been, I guess, a little bit of a controversy over. There's a third-year law student at Harvard, and I guess she was at an outing. It was some sort of societal dinner or whatever. She was out with friends, and I guess she'd made the argument to them at that dinner that black people are genetically predisposed to be stupider than white people, right? And I guess there was some pushback. All right, and so I guess she felt bad enough.
And she backed down,
apparently. Yeah, she backed down. She felt so bad. She's like, you know, I've really got to let people know that I think black people are more stupid than white people. So she went ahead, put together an email, you know, and sent it out. Well, you know, if you send that kind of shit out, then what happens from there, right? And so the email got sent to the Harvard Black Law Students Association, and from there it's just kind of gone on. And now she's on Gawker, she's on Feministing, she's on, you know, all these other websites, WonkGet, and I haven't identified her. And that's something we could talk about here too. I haven't mentioned her name yet because I don't know if that's completely fair or not, and I'm still kind of grappling with that. But the bottom line,
Oh no, go ahead.
No. And I guess the thing is, though, I mean, this is an old, you know, trope here about, you know, this is some, you know, really bad science that people have been, you know, it's informed slavery, it's justification around slavery, Jim Crow law, the bell curve, and here we have it again today. And this young lady, just by the way, she has lined up, you know, this really plum federal clerkship with a judge out in California. So anyway, all this is coming down now, and that's kind of where we are with it. And people are reacting to the reactions. So here we are. What do you guys think?
I don't have a problem naming with her, and I'll say her name right now. It's Stephanie Grace. And the reason I don't is because she sent out an email to a very large number of people. And so she does not have, in my mind, an expectation of privacy there. Like, she has decided to publicize her views to such a degree that it went out to people who obviously, like, disagreed with her and who had no, had made no pact to keep her views secret with her. And so, like, I don't have a problem with it. I feel like we live in a society now enough that everyone knows that if you send out an email to a listserv, it's going to get forwarded and people are going to talk about it. I also completely understand why a blog doesn't want to identify her, because they probably they could be subject to a First Amendment challenge, and they do not have the resources to that. I mean, she's not going to sue us. Invasion of a privacy, probably. It's not libel because it's true.
Right, it's true. It's true.
Right, yeah.
And so I would understand why a blog wouldn't want to be the first to identify her, but we wouldn't be the first anyway, so.
Yeah. She has a lot bigger. I mean, I'm looking at Gawker right now. That's like 77,000 hits on this one, on this post with her picture on it. So it's not, she ought to go out to people who have money if she's really worked up about it, you know what I mean?
It's over for her.
Yeah, right.
So, Joel, what was your argument, I guess, in opposition to naming her, to putting her name out there?
Well, I guess, you know, here's my I can go either or on this. I guess my thing is that, you know, I'm on a couple of listservs, and if, you know, I sent out an email that every now and again, you know, I say some shit that's uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Or that I, you know, that like I wouldn't want everybody broadcasting with my name under it. You know, Black Ink or Joel, however people know me. And you know, I understand. You do have to be smart, because I don't say everything that comes to my mind and I don't put it into an email, right? But you know, I can understand, you know, her feeling like maybe that was private. And then maybe she shared it with a certain amount of people, you know, a certain group of people. I don't know the context of that specifically. And so that, you know, now people are trying to blow up her spot, get a clerkship taken away. And I don't feel sorry for her, but I can understand, you know, maybe how that might be a tad problematic. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really sympathize with her, but like, I guess, you know, if everybody took everything that I said that was ugly and posted it and put my picture with it, then I don't know how I would feel, you know what I'm saying? But I guess the thing is, once people know who you are, you know, you can't get mad at them for thinking you're a shithead. You know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
Well, do you think that anything you say, and I know all of us are on different listservs, and we're always having all these kind of passionate conversations in all these different media, but do you think anything you say is if anything you ever say is black people is the equivalent of black people are genetically predisposed? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, is anything you say on, I mean, this girl, this is not like, you know, well, I mean, I can't think. I'm trying to think of something. I'm thinking it's like a little bit racist, but being a little bit racist is kind of like being a little bit pregnant.
I mean, I guess it'd be like we'll be the equivalent, like, you know, well, you know, rape isn't bad all the time. You know what
I
mean? Like,
I can't think of anything that you could possibly say.
Well, yeah. Sorry. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that there's anything that's like a perfect analogy to how dumb this is.
Yeah. Right.
This is. I mean, this is pretty bad. I mean, she. This is, and like you said at the top, like the argument she's making is the argument that undergirded slavery and undergirded, you know, centuries of discrimination against Black people and other people of color was that white people are just natively more smart than them.
Right.
And, you know, obviously, you could, the comparisons, I mean, that was the reason why women weren't given the right to vote, because again, men were supposedly natively more intelligent and all this other stuff. Jill Filipovich, I'm saying that right, a feminist, wrote this fantastic blog post kind of dissecting this whole issue. And one of the things she was making the argument about, was that, and I think it was pretty convincingly, was that this whole desire to say that she isn't this Stephanie Grace isn't racist. And that to protect our identity is kind of part of the problem. Like this whole culture of, like, you can't really get more racist than saying that Black people are genetically inferior. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, right.
Everyone's falling over themselves, particularly the Above the Law blog, which apparently is a law student blog, on which this was a major issue of discussion. They were falling over themselves to not name her. Again, like you said, she is going to have a Ninth Circuit. She's going to be a clerk on the Ninth Circuit Court. So she's on the Harvard Law Review. I mean, this is a woman who is obviously incredibly privileged, and in a privileged position. And so I think it does matter if she's going to be hearing cases in which she thinks that the people that maybe one of the people involved in the case, maybe the plaintiff or whatever, is natively less intelligent than white people.
Yeah, which I think is the biggest defense of this against, like, if she does bring a first, you know, evasion and privacy suit against anyone who names her, it's like you are about to be in a position that will put you on a path to a public service kind of job. And right. You are going to be the kind of person who makes decisions in ways like this. And we have a right to know who our nation's preeminent law school is promoting to those powerful positions. But I wanted to say too, the thing that I like most about Jill's post was there's a part where she kind of goes off on the culture that allowed the like really hyper academic culture that allows this like everything should be open for debate thing to happen,
yeah.
Which I think we all have had some like, experience with.
He has some experience with this, yes.
And I also like now that I live in DC, I feel like I live in a city that's like where young college grads come to have like debate camp all the time, where it's like, but what if I say this to you? And you know, and I think it's like it's great to foster debate, but not everything is up for debate. And the bigger problem too is that people, I think that the First Amendment right to free speech means that they have a right to be like coddled in everything that they say. Like, oh, you know, I was just making a point and you can't call me a racist or you can't be mean to me. It's like, no, you can make your racist point and then we all have the right to hate you for the rest of your life. Like, there is
the
no
right to, in turn to call you a racist, right? I mean
exactly,
this is,
yeah.
She doesn't have the right to not have someone call her a racist. I mean, and it's funny because, you know, I've been reading some blog posts and people have been like, well, I don't think what she said was racist. I think she's just not up on the latest science. But the problem is, as Joel was saying, the people who support the science are all racist. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
right.
This science has been pretty much more or less like debunked by everyone outside of like the most like this is not a serious academic discussion anymore. Like the people who have these conversations are all like white supremacist, right leaning groups. They're not like serious academics and serious psychologists. And then we got.
Yes.
Like, sorry. Go
ahead. There's a couple of things to this. One, I mean, I guess that first of all, I mean, obviously it's bad science. It's stupid science. You know what I mean? And like it supposes that there's like these clean racial lines where there's just like black.
Right.
And then there's white. You know, and then they're against each other in the race Olympics, you know? You know, and so the problem I had was the Above the Law blog acting like, I think it was Jill that kind of hit on this point that like we should entertain this argument because it's a legitimate question. Like, you know, I guess they think it'd be okay to ask if, you know, somebody's mother was a whore, because it'd be like, well, I mean, she might be, you know, and then that might inform us.
She might be.
You're right. Yeah. And then also, I think there was another problematic point in there where they said, well, why isn't the Harvard Black Law, Black Student Law Association, like, speaking out about this? Why don't they have an official comment? Like, as if it demanded them have a teachable moment. And in fact, I think they did mention teachable moment, which is, like, my God, becoming one of the, like, phrases out there. But it's like they demand it. Like, it's like they don't have to teach everybody not to be racist. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes, like, you know, they don't, you know, black people don't always have to speak out in the same way that, like, women don't always have to speak out when somebody is being, like, a sexist. You know what I mean? Like, some shit just doesn't demand an official response. Like, you just let it sit there and let that dumbass argument speak for itself. You know what
right.
I mean?
Absolutely. I think, you know, like you just said, I mean, like, you know, these are third-year law students at Harvard University. You know, they got finals coming up. You know, it's like, this is not the only thing. Like, leaping, like, out of there, like, no, we have to call out this by all measures, this entitled, privileged white girl.
Right.
And scold her for it. I mean, you know, that she's being scolded by people who are outside of the law school seems to be really, really bothersome to people. But I think that's kind of how it should be, right? I mean, people keep saying, oh, marketplace of ideas and yada, yada, yada. But this is the marketplace of ideas. You say some shit and you're going to get pushback for it. And that's not, right. you do not have an absolute right to protection from the consequences of what you say.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. There's another, speaking of the stupid science, I was just going to say too, there's a part that also really bothered me just as an aside where it's like, she just says that of something that's a given, like women tend to perform less well on math due at least in part to prenatal levels of testosterone, which also account for variations in mathematics performance within genders. That is like not true at all. And I, you know, and it's just like everything else in her post. It's like, you know, it's like, it's what Jill said. It's like, as long as you give things like an internal logic and accept some things as given for law students, that's okay,
right,
you know,
right.
And this is the kind of thing that you, this is the kind of shit that gets you,
right? Absolutely. Yeah. So you everyone,
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Do your thing.
No. Because I was just gonna say, like, I mean, again, it's like, first of all, it's like confusing nature versus nurture, and then like this girl, like everybody that makes this argument, like, makes a confusion between like knowledge and intelligence, like they're the same.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And actually, like performance and intelligence, like, absolutely. Because the only ways that we measure intelligence really are performance on tests. So it's like, you know, you have to take that as a given then, that performance on tests indicate intelligence.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, that's like the first fundamental flaw with all of these things, you know.
Right, and the kids who have access to all the resources that allow them to perform better on tests are going to perform better on tests.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. One of the other things that Jill talked about was like the white code, where it's like, you know, just kind of these like winks and nods where people know what you're talking about. And there's this like, there's this assumption that racism only happens in the South, but it happens everywhere. And it really happens at these elite institutions. And it's the kind of thing where it's like a bunch of white people in a room, like all assume that everybody thinks the same things about race, and it's just polite not to bring it up. And like, and I feel that way, especially like also in DC with people with whom I politically disagree. It's like, you have opinions and you foster the kind of policy that hurts people's lives every day, and I'm not going to pretend to like you. I think you're a terrible person. And so it's like, Stephanie Grace, I do not like you, and I'm not going to pretend like you're a good person.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that's
man,
awesome.
She called your mama a bitch.
Yeah, I know. Damn. in the quote race Olympics, it's like, it also comes to like black people being like dumber and like more criminally inclined than white people. Like, I would just like to sit down and be like, okay, Stephanie, so if we just acknowledge that's true, like, what are black people better than white people at? Like,
right,
it,
absolutely.
Like, basketball,
and,
you know?
Right, exactly. And exactly. No, I mean, it's always the same stuff. You know, it's always convenient that the stuff that, you know, that people come up with studies to determine whether or not like people have some kind of proclivities toward or stuff that already happens to be things in which there are like social ideas that are strongly held social notions about. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, whether it's like penis eyes or whatever. It's like, well, do black people really do have, it's always shit like that. It's always some stupid shit like that. No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't feel any sympathy for this girl. I mean, for this woman. I feel like this is a lot of the conversations we had in undergrad all over. You know
well,
I mean?
That's another thing I was going to say. It's like, this is the kind of thing where it's like, you know, these things should really have been hashed out at a younger age.
Right. I mean, she was a social major at Princeton, which really raised my eyebrow, because sociology actually deals with like social location and the consequences of like environment on and culture, like on the way people and groups turn out, right? And so like it seems really strange to me that she would jump from soc, or maybe not. I mean, I guess you can be a conservative sociologist. I guess it's perfectly possible.
Well, I also think, like...
Well, I shouldn't... That's not fair. I shouldn't assume that because she's a racist, she's a conservative. They're just having a lot of fun.
There's also this kind of, like, reliance on data in sociology that is blinding in some ways, too. Like, if you're not a particularly adept sociologist, then you would take as a given studies that show that Blacks have lower IQ. You know what I mean? Like, there's kind of a reliance on data in numbers that you can measure that I think is problematic about sociology. But that's like my own problem with sociology as a field. But I was going to say also that, yeah, like if she were like 17 or 18 fucking years old and like was having a conversation with a friend and working this shit out to herself, like that would just be fine.
Right. Right. She's a third year law student at the most selective law school in the country. And she's about to land a really, really prestigious clerkship, and she's going to be set for the rest of her life, and she's going to be making decisions that might legitimately be life or death decisions for people. And if she's making life or death decisions for people who she thinks are natively stupider, that could have disastrous consequences. And again, this goes to the whole idea that like there's no such thing as benign racism. You know, like right. There, even if you like. If you hold racist or homophobic or sexist views, they will manifest themselves in some way. And for people to pretend that like just the fact that she was like voicing this thought will have no implications in the actual real world and it's just some kind of academic exercise is incredibly naive or disingenuous or both. I don't know.
It happens over and over again. And I remember when I was just when I was an undergrad, there was a law professor at the University of Texas who said the same thing, you know, that there was an uncomfortable truth about affirmative action and that, you know, that we just have to account for the fact that Blacks and Latinos just aren't, you know, they just don't have a high IQ and they can't, you know, they need these preferences to get into school. And I mean, you see it over and over again. I mean, it pops up, you know, every few years. You know, it's proof that this never really goes away. And so I guess it's good that, like, we shamed her into, you know, shamed her into scrubbing herself off the internet. Because apparently, you know, she's like not on Facebook anymore and been taken, you know. So like, maybe she'll be ashamed enough to like question us. Or maybe this will just, you know,
reinforce it for her. Yeah.
Right. Right. The reason people are mad at me is because it's the truth, you know, or something.
right, absolutely.
I speak hard truths.
Yeah. I don't want to hear it.
They say, right? Oh, I'm dropping that knowledge and they ain't trying to pick it up. Boy, so, yeah. Do either of you think she should lose her clerkship?
Yes.
Man, you know.
Joel is conflicted on this.
I don't know, man. That's a tough decision. You know, I mean, I guess like if I was that judge and I had like two candidates and all things being equal, I'd pick the one who didn't send that email. I guess that's no, I guess that's if that's the best way. So I guess I don't know that she should lose it, but I'm saying if I had an equal option, that's where I would go.
But she already has it now. So
I wouldn't necessarily want to see her lose her clerkship. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's just me being soft and being polite. But I you know, if she lost it, I would not shed a tear. But I wouldn't advocate for her to lose her job. I mean, what do you think? I mean, would you? I mean,
I could.
I think it looks bad for the American justice system. No, I mean, in all seriousness, it's like, I don't have a lot of faith in it anyway at times. And so, you know, I mean, this is our legal system. And so I think.
I
think that's actually a really compelling argument is that, we're people who I think, are really concerned about, racial disparities in the way the laws, applied, and enforced. And so it seems to me like you couldn't have someone who was like, who actively endorsed racist ideas.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I think she, I guess she should probably. I mean, no, let me not equivocate here. I don't want to sound like I'm like, you know, getting confirmed by the Senate. Like, I cannot answer that because if, you know, that question, the case may come before me on the bench. Nah, she should. She should fucking lose that shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's I can't think of like a federal agency where maybe she could go where she couldn't cause any problems, but like
absolutely maybe she can go to private practice, maybe she can go to private corporate
practice. Yeah, no, there's like some white shoe law firm somewhere who wants her now, but like, you know, I just like the legal system is like the worst place to go if you have questions about someone's like racial attitudes
on the subject. I guess we should move on to endorsements. Joel, you want to shout something out?
Yeah, a couple things. I guess, you know, we blog about it all the time, and since I didn't have any other ideas, I'm just going to say people should really watch Treme. Like, it's a really good show. If you don't have HBO, there's ways around it. I know people know. You know,
see, this is the hip-hop culture right now. Now telling you how to pirate...
Yeah, right. No. Advocating illegal activity and shit.
This man, should be more like bootleg. Obama. I don't think Obama bootlegs cable.
Yeah, man, he was in Southside, bro. I mean,
he did at some point.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh. No, he had Friday.
We already know he smoked weed, so, you know, he's smoking weed. Yeah, right. Making $35,000 a year as a state legislator and going home. Oh, yeah. on the chip.
Yeah, I mean, he went to a barber. You know, he had like went to the same barber for a long time. I mean, you know how it is in the barbershop. People come in there with so.
He got the DVDs.
Right. You know, it's like Star Wars 8. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got that new Drake album.
You know? Not all this. Drake album. He's like, what? He's like, right. Anyways, we are on different sides of the racial. Yeah. Propriety and parameters.
Yeah, right. You think all mulattoes know each other?
No, exactly. We only have to know each other. So, right. So this motherfucker said mulattoes.
So I really thought he tried to be ironic. You know what I'm saying? I was like,
No. He said mulattoes. Like, what? You know what I mean? Like, what are we talking about right now?
This is like. Like the roots or something, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like root, you know? So I was just like, man, come on, dog. You need to chill.
Oh, my God.
Woo!
But, sorry. So, Treme.
Yeah, Treme. Treme is good, you know what I'm saying? I mean, if you like New Orleans, if you love New Orleans, if you're indifferent, you know what I'm saying? If you don't know a lot about what happened after Katrina, if you want to learn, if you didn't know a lot about it, I think it really would speak to you. I know a lot of people, you know, I'm one of those people that didn't see The Wire, so I don't know, but yeah, I know. I know it's shameful. I got the first two seasons sitting here, and I've had them for like over a year or two. It's shameful.
Oh, you got to rectify it, man.
Yeah, I know. As soon as Treme is over, I'm going to get into that. But I mean, go ahead.
I don't blame you. Like, The Wire is like a commitment.
Yeah. You know, everybody I know who watched it. Yeah, everybody who watches it, they're like, well, I burned through like six episodes, you know, in one day. And I'm like, damn, where do you get that kind of time?
You got the kind of time, bro.
Like, where do you do that from,
and
man?
You just got married, so you know what I mean? You got all this, you know.
You're a person.
Yeah, I am, man. I'm like, that's why I'm actually kind of happy that I'm in here, like in my computer, my little computer room, watching the NBA playoffs. Because otherwise, I wouldn't have really had, you know, it's not like I'm able to hog the TV and watch like, you know, 2 hours straight of basketball. You know
what I mean? Absolutely, right. So wait, you worked in Shreveport, right? When you were in the bureau?
Like that, yeah. I did work in Shreveport for a couple of years, and yeah, man. You know, so I mean, you know, I went down to New Orleans several times. And obviously, I lived in Houston
when
Katrina happened. So, you know, we were there for, you know, a lot of, you know, Houston opened its arms to a lot of the evacuees. And man, I tell you, man, it's just it's heartbreaking, but it's really cool. I mean, because also, you know, it's not all, you know, depressing or whatever. I mean, it's like a lot of cool people. There's good music, you know what I'm saying? There's funny people, Antoine Baptiste. I mean, it's just an awesome show. And I can't say enough about it. And I know some people are bored. I mean, I guess they want to see, you know, the pathology, you know, black people shooting each other and shit, or, you know, playing basketball. So, I mean, it's just like people doing regular shit and, like, struggling. You know what I mean? And it's dope.
All right, Monica, sorry.
Oh, what's my shout out? So in a completely much nerdier shout out that everyone is going to now think I'm a total jackass hipster for endorsing, like WAMU station, the local NPR station here, does this really cool thing on Sunday nights.
That's a bank.
WAMU is also the local NPR station. It's American University. But yeah, it was a bank at one point that was bought by Chase. Anyway, and I was a customer, and Chase bought me, and I hated Chase. So anyway, it is I just caught it once because I was driving home late on a Sunday night, and I was in the car for an hour. But from 7 to, I think, 9, I think it's a two-hour thing, they play these really old radio shows like Dragnet and this, like, insurance company investigator detective show that's like trying to get people who are trying to scam their insurance company. And it's really entertaining. I don't know why I like it so much, but it's like, I'm really happy if I find myself listening to NPR at that time of night and I'm like, oh, it's the radio show. And just like, I just see the radio as like a source of news and podcasts and stuff. But I think we all are heavy like radio listeners and audio production listeners. And so, I mean, because you're downloading this podcast. And so I think it's really cool to like kind of revisit at a time when it was like more of a source of just straight up entertainment.
I actually don't know what I want to endorse. I don't know what I want to endorse. I should have thought really hard about this. Oh, I know what I'll endorse. I'm training for the Brooklyn Half Marathon. I probably said this on the podcast like 100 times already. I'm training for the Brooklyn Half Marathon in a couple weeks. And as part of my training, I go to the gym all the time, but I started doing P90X. And some of it all of it is kind of hard, but there's this one routine, and if you get a chance to do it, it's called Ab River X. It is like the hardest shit you will ever do in your life. It's like, it's so crushingly hard. Like, it's like, what is this about? The people on the tape who are obviously in incredible shape are all like falling on the ground, like clutching their sides. I've been doing it for a couple weeks, and I finally, or not a couple weeks, for a couple months now, and I finally got to a point where I can do the whole tape without the whole, it's only 15 minutes, but it is
brutal. Wow.
Like, at the end of the 15 minutes, on your living room floor, you'll be covered in sweat, and you'll be holding your side like, I finally got to a point where I can finish it, but, you know, if you get a chance to, I didn't realize how much of a cult P90X was. Like, if you, there's like a million message boards, you type P90X in the Google, a million things will come up. Like, I mean, people with like posting their results, and like all these message boards and all this stuff like that. But the one thing that everybody, like, no matter what their fitness level, says is like the Ab River X thing. It's really, 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 really hard. So I don't know if it's an endorsement so much as and it works. I mean, I'm much stronger. You know, I have much stronger core than I did however many months ago. But it's hard as hell. Alisa can vouch for me. Alisa, my teammate, my blog teammate. Can vouch for it. It's hard as hell. And Monica, we've done it before, right? Hello?
Yeah, it's hard as hell. And it's hard, and I've done Pilates fairly regularly for like years. And Pilates is hard. I'm not gonna...
Yeah, it is. Pilates is hard.
See, man, you know what? All these are things that I really need to get into, because, you know, and I'm sure I've complained enough about this, being the old man I am, but, you know, you guys know that I, like, herniated a disc recently. Yeah, that I herniated a disc, and I was diagnosed. Hurt my triceps, and also diagnosed with moderate arthritis. I also have numbness in like two fingers.
Oh no!
Is this because you were an athlete?
You know what? I guarantee. I'm pretty certain that I've had a herniated disc for a couple years, because I've had neck problems.
For y'all who don't know, Joel was a running back in college for the Texas. Well, can I see it? Can I blow your whole spot?
Yeah, go ahead. It's fine.
Played for Texas Christian in high school and in college, and was a running back on the team. And he was supplanted,
rightfully so,
by LaDainian Tomlinson. There you go.
I think the coaches made a good decision, but that worked out for everybody. But yeah, man. So I'm like actively, and I think P90X is going to have to be the kind of thing, because like right now, I'm not in a position to where like I can lift weights. You know what I mean? Like I can't put that kind of. I can't. It's hard for me to carry things or whatever, and you know, use that arm. So I'm needing something that's going to challenge me, but like not, you know, continue my slow deterioration. You know what I mean? So.
Nice. All right, that's enough babbling from us and complaining about racism and all of that stuff.
Race car.
You played it. Played it, you know what I mean? We get it in the mail when you're black, when you turn 16.
Yeah, right. <It's>
like, on behalf of my homie Joel in Thanks. Tampa.
Peace.
And Monica in D.C.
Yeah, good night.
This is... GD and be easy. Done.
Our theme music is 8 by Aeon. You can catch us at postbougie.com.
Mama, I'm on the TV.
No, you're not. You're on a little listen-to podcast.